sacrifice. What is its meaning? Peace and tranquility reigned over the orange grove. A cool breeze drifted among the trees, carrying the fresh scent of citrus for miles around. The sun was at its peak, but the humid, dark green leaves of the grove cast a cozy shadow, conducive to productive, thoughtful conversation. In small groups, the disciples of the great sage gathered at the heart of the grove, where a cozy white rotunda stood, hidden from prying eyes. 12 graceful columns, adorned with delicate pink and lilac ivy blossoms, supported the majestic dome, adorned from inside with various mystical patterns and frescoes depicting the masters, angels, and the Almighty. Despite its deceptively small size, the rotunda easily accommodated all the disciples who had come today to meet the Keeper of Knowledge. The Master himself stood in the center, on a small elevation. A special, incomparable energy emanated from him. The Master literally glowed from within, enveloping the entire rotunda in an aura of wisdom, prosperity, and unconditional love. As soon as all the disciples settled on the benches, the Keeper of Knowledge gestured towards a young girl in the front row. She had arrived first and waited reverently for the meeting to begin.
"Dear Master,"
she began with a quick, chirping voice, resembling a little bird's twittering.
"People around me ask a lot to tell them what is sacrifice. Could you please tell us about sacrifice?"
"Sacrifice?"
melodiously sang the Keeper of Knowledge. His already strong voice acquired a hypnotic, unearthly power.
"Mariana, sacrifice is the beginning of the story of our world,"
the sage pronounced with a smile.
"God made the first sacrifice when he began to condense himself. And from this condensation emerged our physical world. All subtle levels, all gross forms, absolutely everything. God sacrificed himself, transitioning from the subtlest form of world consciousness to a coarser one, mental and astral. The second sacrifice God made was when he separated Atmans from himself and placed them in physical bodies so that they could live."
"Master, I remember you saying that Atmans suffer in our earthly shell. Can we somehow help free them or at least alleviate their suffering?"
Mariana asked with hope. Her sensual, light gray eyes were full of tears.
"You are right. Atman suffers in the physical body,"
the Master pronounced, directing rays of calm and understanding towards the disciple.
"In earthly shells, Atman is confined, like in a coffin. There it is, in a semi-dead state. But we can alleviate its suffering. For this, a reverse sacrifice is necessary. It is necessary to give up everything that hinders Atman from returning and regaining its divinity. Everything that holds us back causes negative emotions, suffering, laziness. All this needs to be sacrificed so that Atman can be liberated and regain its divine power."
"Great Master, tell me, does the bio-robot also need to be sacrificed? Am I thinking correctly?"
A dusky-skinned youngster in a light blue striped shirt addressed the sage, his brown eyes peering attentively from beneath blue-framed glasses with genuine interest.
"You are right, Avde. The bio-robot must be sacrificed to the gods so that Atman can separate and reconnect with the higher, dissolve into God. The bio-robot must be subservient to us. A person must control the bio-robot, not vice versa."
"You are right, dear Master,"
exclaimed Mariana.
"I often see people who live only under the command of their bio-robot. They live only by following their instincts, lowly goals. They overeat, are lazy, sleep 15 hours a day. What spiritual development can there be if even physically they cannot control themselves?"
"And precisely such people later develop health problems,"
added Avde.
"They pity themselves for everything. They don't go to yoga because it's too hard. They eat harmful chemical food because they're too lazy to cook healthy food. They sleep for days on end because development is too difficult."
"Very correct observations."
The Keeper of Knowledge smiled gently.
"I am glad that you are so attentive to the world around you. Indeed, lazy people suffer precisely because they do not want to sacrifice anything. They do not understand that the more they give, the more they will receive in return.
Dear Master, please tell us, how do we determine what needs to be sacrificed and what does not?
Asked a slender blonde with deep blue eyes resembling beautiful lakes. She was one of the most devoted disciples of the Keeper of Knowledge. She attended his meetings regularly, despite them taking place in different countries. Even now, upon learning of the upcoming meeting, she booked tickets for the first available flight.
Good question, Adele,
the Master pronounced.
We must sacrifice that which harms us the most, prevents us from developing, with which a person is most identified, that which destroys them and leads them to the grave. We must disidentify from that, sacrifice our vices, and through that, active growth and development will occur.
For example, should we sacrifice lies and our own sick imagination?
Avdi clarified.
Yes, what destroys a person are all kinds of lies, things that don't exist. Therefore, we sacrifice our sick imagination, that which does not exist and never will. A person imagines something, holds on to it very tightly. Everything they imagine seems so valuable and important to them. Therefore, a person with a rich, sick imagination cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. It's as difficult for them to enter the kingdom of heaven as it is for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. Rich not in money, but in their sick imagination. Any pauper, any ignorant person with a rich, sick imagination could be. They have nothing, but they are full of foolish fantasies, and they consider it to be real. All the foolishness they have imagined, all the paranoia that has come to them. Most of all, a person is identified with lies. It is the cause and source of all suffering.
Master, does it mean that in order to free one's Atman and reach a new level of development, a person needs to sacrifice their suffering first?
Avdi clarified again.
Yes, but it's not as easy as it seems. Very often people don't want to sacrifice their suffering. Their agonies are more precious to them than anything else in the world. For example, a person feels offended, and instead of letting go of this offense, allowing forgiveness and grace into their soul, they torment themselves, suffer, cultivate negative emotions within themselves. It only seems that a person is willing to sacrifice their suffering for any pleasure, but rather they will sacrifice any pleasure but keep the suffering.
This also applies to sports,
Adele said quietly.
It seems simple. Go to the gym, engage in sports, and you'll have a fit, healthy body. But people value laziness more. It's more valuable to lie on the couch and watch TV and then complain about their poor health and weak body.
A very good example,
smiled the sage. And another hand rose.
Dear Master, it seems to me that this happens because people do not see or understand their own imagination and harmful thoughts. People usually cling to what they see, to money, to loved ones, to their own body and everything close to it. But imagination, they cannot feel it or touch it. That's why a person doesn't understand the great danger it poses, right?
Mariana speculated, looking at the Master with interest.
You are right. To control one's sick imagination, one must ask oneself the right questions. Understand why the offense occurred, why we cannot let it go, why we hold on to it, nurture it within ourselves. Why this ugliness is so precious to us. And in such a moment, you realize that there is no longer any offense against the person. You're just creating it within yourself to suffer.
Master, some even deliberately intensify this offense. They drink alcohol to drown their sorrows, listen to sad music to prolong the feeling of pain.
A mature man with a thin, eagle-like nose said.
A good example, Selim. Such habits need to be eliminated. They always lead to a bad outcome. False fantasies bring suffering and offense with them, and it's very difficult for a person to part with them. For example, a person imagines themselves to be Napoleon or the Pope, demands special treatment. But people see that they are just losers, laugh at them, and the person suffers, thinks that people do not accept them, gets offended by them, and all because of their own sick imagination.
Master, I don't understand. If a person is tormenting themselves, suffering because of their own sick imagination, why not just get rid of it?
Mariana turned to the Keeper of Knowledge again, spreading her hands in surprise.
How will they part with their imagination? After all, there they are, Napoleon with vast riches. But here they are just a failure.
The sage smiled.
A person does not want to accept reality, because in it, effort is required to achieve goals. But in imagination, no effort is needed. Building castles in the air is easier than anything else. So they hold on to this more than anything else in the world, to this nonsense they invented for themselves, or that was instilled in them. And then they suffer, agonize over this nonsense. And sometimes, people just invent problems out of thin air. They think that someone looked at them harshly, someone judged them, so they are afraid to show themselves and make decisions.
That's what happened with my niece, can I tell you?
A woman in a long white dress, cinched with a wide black ribbon, turned to the master. After receiving approval, she continued.
She started doing spiritual practices, going to yoga, attending sessions with the conductors of power. But at one point, she thought that her fellow students at university were laughing at her because of it. They said she had joined some kind of sect. So she stopped going, following the public opinion. Now she's divorced, with a child in her arms, can't pay off her loans. And I think if she had continued to attend sessions, listened to wise people, surrounded herself with like-minded individuals, nothing like this would have happened.
You're right, Leah. This is a very accurate example of how a person invents problems for themselves, follows the voice of the crowd, and ultimately ruins their life.
The Keeper of Knowledge sympathetically stated, directing a supportive beam of light to Leah in her resolve to follow the right path.
Great Master, I also have an example of why it's difficult to consciously sacrifice offense to get rid of it. May I share?
Salim addressed the Keeper.
Of course,
smiled the sage.
Share your experience with everyone.
Thanks to you, I am now in a spiritual environment, among people who are also working on themselves, striving towards the great goal. It's much easier for us to let go of our offenses and release them. This is because you take offense away from a person, help them part with it. But what about those who are unfamiliar with the knowledge and the school? Looking back, I realized that before the exaggeration practice, I was very hot-tempered, couldn't control my negative emotions, and didn't know how to forgive. When you gave me this practice, I couldn't understand how to start it for a long time. And only when I came to the retreat with the help of spiritual guidance, I was able to overcome my inertia because you not only give understanding of why to do the practice, how to do it, but also you give energy to perform it. Create conditions in which it's impossible not to make a spiritual effort. Circumstances, literally, you could say, pressed me emotionally against the wall and told me, exaggerate, exaggerate. And there was no opportunity to be lazy, to ignore the situation for development. I realized that I could laugh instead of getting offended. It was a revelation for me. Then I realized that I couldn't consciously sacrifice offense until you created such an atmosphere for me, such an environment, and organized external help through like-minded individuals, through discipline.
Excellent example, Selim. Indeed, a person often doesn't even realize that their imaginary world is sick and wrong. They believe that everything they imagined is real. That's why it's very difficult to sacrifice it. That's why a master, fellow practitioners who will give practices, will remind you that all this is sick imagination that needs to be sacrificed is necessary. Alone, a person is weak against any offenses, against negative emotions, against identifications.
Great Master, you often tell us that various TV series and movies transmit false and often harmful programs. Can't we also learn from there a lot for our sick imagination?
Leah asked with interest.
Yes, that's right,
the Master replied.
For example, they distort the depiction of offense in such a way that it leads to a person trying to hide the offense instead of getting rid of it. A person perceives offense as normal. They get used to the fact that jealousy, anger, throwing tantrums are normal. But in society, you have to hide it, pretend that everything is fine.
And there are people who are so used to lying to themselves that they even lie to doctors when they're sick,
Salim said quietly.
The doctor asks, "Does anything hurt?" And the person lies because they're used to hiding their true emotions, not working through them. So they can't get rid of their ailments, both physical and spiritual.
Dear Master, am I right in understanding that the sacrifice, like the attitude, should involve all centers? When do all three centers come together?
A youngster with curly, light brown hair spoke with a melodic voice. His hands were covered with tattoos in an incomprehensible language that could be clearly seen through his white shirt.
For several days, I had a desire to get rid of negative emotions, but nothing worked. I stretched, but continued to get angry. Sometimes I felt repentance coming, but in a moment, a flash. And then again, a wave of anger started anew. And only when I did everything together, went through a deep review, understood where it was leading me, experienced sincere repentance, and then did furious warm-up, anchoring in myself the new understanding that came to me in repentance. Then I immediately felt better. So in sacrifice, there should also be such a mindset that all three centers are involved to truly get rid of it?
You're right, Robert,
the Keeper of Knowledge said with a smile.
If we only wish with our minds, then the aspiration will be too weak, and it will be difficult to achieve our goals. In order for our wish to come true and turn into an achievable goal, it must be emotionally experienced and action must be taken. Real efforts must be made. Get angry at yourself for being in negative emotions. Physically put the body in the right postures, typical of repentance, and then the state we are striving for. Because offense has its posture, fear, its posture, jealousy, its posture, and so does every emotion. If we hold the posture of offense, then how will it disappear from us? But if we take the right posture, ignite the emotions, and with determination and understanding begin the transformation, then the three centers start working together and the state changes.
Great, so it means God doesn't care what exactly we sacrifice?
Mariana asked the Keeper of Knowledge, modestly tucking a stray strand of black hair behind her ear.
It's just that there comes a moment when it's time to sacrifice, and if you don't give up something negative at that moment, then God will punish.
Not quite so,
the Master gently corrected the girl.
Imagine that life is like a vast river, and you're floating along it. Along the way, you acquire some knowledge and some beliefs. Some of them help you to continue your journey, preventing you from drowning in the turbulent flow of life's river. They serve as support.
Like your classes, for example,
exclaimed Mariana, immediately blushing. She was so delighted to meet the Keeper of Knowledge that she struggled to contain her emotions. The sage smiled generously and nodded affirmatively to the disciple, sending her energy of confidence and understanding.
Mariana is right. There are elevated things that help in life, and there are negative, useless, or even harmful things that serve as ballast on the path. People burden themselves with these stones, dragging them along. At first it may be easy, but then these stones start pulling you down, and that's when the Almighty sends us situations for us to sacrifice our negativity, drop the stones, and continue the journey. And if we don't notice these situations persistently dragging along the unnecessary, then the situations repeat themselves over and over again.
So, it's not God punishing us if we don't sacrifice negative emotions, but we're sinking because we don't want to part with them?
Robert clarified.
Yes,
replied the keeper of knowledge.
In order for a person to quickly part with their ballast, God sends disappointments, all to destroy false seductions. And then a person can see the lesson and absorb it. They get rid of the excess burden and continue their journey through the river of life with ease. And if a person falls into the same traps again, repeats the same mistakes, then disappointments come again. And it is through this process that development occurs.
Yes, that's why many women say there's no love,
Leah said sadly.
Because they met an unworthy man and didn't learn God's lesson. So they encounter the same type everywhere, just in different guises, because they don't want to let go of their baggage. They drag it from one relationship to another, and then they say, men are all jerks.
A light wave of laughter swept through the hall. Apparently, each of those present had at least one acquaintance with such thinking.
A correct example,
the keeper of knowledge approvingly said.
Unfortunately, people often don't understand that until they learn God's lesson, the prince on a white horse won't appear. The first thing to do is to change your thinking, your destructive behavior, and sacrifice all false beliefs. Otherwise, they'll keep encountering domestic tyrants, scoundrels, and alcoholics.
Dear Master, does it mean that sacrifice is the first step to development?
Asked the petite, freckled girl from the second row. Throughout the session, she was on pins and needles. Each phrase of the Keeper of Knowledge resonated with her as a profound revelation.
Yes, Elsa. We must constantly sacrifice something bad in order to develop. Many people perceive the word sacrifice very negatively. They think they'll have to sacrifice their health, freedom, cut off a hand or a foot.
Another wave of cheerful laughter echoed through the hall.
Of course, that's not the case.
The master continued with a smile.
We should only sacrifice what prevents us from moving forward. Only what causes us pain, suffering, and negative emotions. First and foremost, these are various identifications and imposed roles.
Great keeper. But most people are confident that their identifications and empty dreams are important. To give them up is like cutting off a leg,
Avde remarked.
Exactly. To such people, stuck in the illusory world, the Almighty sends various situations so that they finally understand that it's time to break free from the trap, to throw away their stones and float to the surface. Only when a person begins to sacrifice something bad does their development begin.
Master, it's true that sometimes the process of sacrificing our identifications is very painful. The mind doesn't want to let go of its beliefs. Is there any trick for the mind or false personality to make sacrifice easier?
Robert asked thoughtfully.
It's good that you raised this question.
The sage said,
it's true. The mind can merge so much with an identification that parting with it will feel like withdrawal for an addict. But no trick will help here. Understanding is needed.
Dear Master, what if a person, for example, is put under hypnosis? Then can't their beliefs be removed?
Elsa asked again.
Under hypnosis, a person can be suggested anything. But when they come out of that state, nothing will change. The person will just be a puppet or a doll being controlled. No deep realizations will come to them. First and foremost, a person must understand why they need to sacrifice their load. And if their stones are forcibly taken away, then they'll gather new ones along the way and sink again.
Great Master, does it mean that a person who embarks on a spiritual path differs from ordinary people in that they sacrifice the bad? Ordinary people often sacrifice something good. For example, women give birth to children in agony, waste their health, then torment themselves with unworthy men, sacrifice their well-being,
clarified Adele.
Exactly,
responded the Keeper of Knowledge with a smile.
People sacrifice the good when they should be sacrificing the bad. Only then does development occur. A spiritually awakened person understands this. That's why they don't sacrifice themselves to society.
Master, I've heard an expression that I think describes accurately what you're talking about,
said Salem.
From childhood, we are sacrificed so that our birth becomes like an abortion.
You're right,
pronounced the sage, folding his fingers in a mudra.
From birth, they try to raise us as sacrifices. Boys are taught to play war, girls to play mother-daughter. So they get used to carrying everything on themselves. And then such damaged children grow up and live out the same scripts. Grown boys go to war as cannon fodder, and women give birth to this cannon fodder so that there's someone to fight.
What a nightmare,
exclaimed Leah, wiping away tears.
And I never even thought about the underlying message behind all these games.
Unfortunately, that's how it is,
emotionally declared the master.
From childhood, we're prepared for sacrifice. Everything we're told, instilled, and taught. It's all preparation, softening the brain, so that a person becomes obedient and willingly goes to slaughter, like a sheep. And to prevent that, one must sacrifice all their rotten beliefs, all their chains, cages, to the gods. Only then will a person finally become free and able to manifest themselves in life.
Wise Master, I've heard that Gurdjieff said that a large number of people on Earth cannot embark on a spiritual path. Only a very small number can be chosen, because the planets still need to feed on low negative energy. Is this true? Or is there still a possibility to put all people on the right spiritual path?
Asked Salim.
Not for now,
replied the Keeper of Knowledge with visible sadness.
Too many souls from lower worlds are incarnating on Earth. They've just transformed from cockroaches and beetles. Of course, it would be wonderful if only angels were incarnated. Then no one would fight. No one would listen to politicians, revolutionaries. Everyone would just sit and meditate, perform spiritual practices. But then the planets would simply have nothing to feed on. That's why they incarnate base entities who reject the saving teaching. These are people of weak mind and weak spirit. They've just recently been worms. That's why they're used to live crawling.
Master, please tell me. When I was 16, I became interested in spirituality and started writing my first spiritual poems. I decided to show them to my mom, but she started correcting the mistakes in them and never understood the meaning of the poems. Why did this happen? Maybe she also reincarnated from some lower being.
Robert turned to the sage, with anguish peering into the deep eyes of the Great One, seeking light and salvation.
Yes, Robert, I understand what you didn't dare to ask out loud. You're drawing the right conclusions. Only a mature soul of a high level is capable of understanding spiritual aspirations. Even if it's the closest person, it doesn't matter. If their soul is not developed enough, they won't understand anything and might even judge you. They might say that you've fallen under bad influence into a cult. That's why you need to surround yourself with pure souls capable of development and understanding. Strive to be as often as possible among those people who are ready to sacrifice all nonsense, willing to part with all the negativity and come closer to the sublime.
Master, how does the process of sacrifice happen?
Elsa asked with interest.
Because it's one thing to want to sacrifice something bad, but it's quite another to actually let go of it. Some identification can't just disappear. So does some process occur? Can it be facilitated or accelerated?
First comes self-observation and accumulation of information. A person needs to learn to control their negative states first. Control negative emotions. Track where they come from and why they are needed. When a person starts accumulating information through self-observation, then understanding arises. And then a person can consciously sacrifice all the negativity.
Great one.
Avdei addressed the Keeper of Knowledge.
There is the concept of the Pyramid of Sacrifice. So am I correct in understanding that the sacrifice becomes more refined? At first we sacrifice money, then our time, then illusions and imagination, and only at the highest level is the true sacrifice, when you can sacrifice yourself. Is that right?
Exactly,
calmly replied the Keeper.
But dear Master, then I don't quite understand when one should sacrifice oneself to God. There is an illusion that I want to sacrifice my entire life to the Creator, but then suddenly I realize that I don't even have a life. After all, I don't know who I am. First, the simple path must be taken. Identify all the important parts in oneself, and then the high sacrifice can be offered to God. Am I correct?
A very wise thought, Avdei. I'm glad you delved into this question so deeply,
said the Keeper of Knowledge, sending waves of warmth, understanding, and unconditional love to the disciples.
You are right. First, you need to understand yourself better. Understand who you are and where you are going, what your spiritual goal is. And only when a person fully completes the earthly path, takes all the lessons from life, then they will be ready to sacrifice even their body. But this is very difficult because if one part is ready to sacrifice everything earthly, then other parts will cling desperately to earthly suffering and vices. That's why it's important to work through all your inner parts. Only then will deep sacrifice be possible.
The sun disk had long gone to the west, painting the sky above the grove with bright orange light. The disciples did not hurry to disperse for a long time. One by one, they approached the Keeper of Knowledge, whispered their questions to him, asked for blessings, and wise advice. The great sage did not deny anyone the knowledge. Spreading his arms wide, he seemed to embrace all the disciples at once, enveloping them in his pure radiance of goodness, light, and warmth. Only when the Mandarin sun completely set beyond the horizon line and the first cool stars lit up in the lilac sky did the last disciples leave the grove, still discussing among each other the knowledge they had just received.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.